Okay. Oh, we're on already, so that sort of tipped our hand there as to what's going to happen. You know, I like Iowa, but enough is enough. As far as what the results from the Iowa caucus is, from the word Caucasian, by the way, tell us nothing. Can't learn anything from the Iowa caucuses. Because if America were like Iowa, we'd all be up to our knees in hog manure, and our ears would be tasseling out. I don't know. I wrote it in a hurry. I do like Iowa, though. So, what do you know?
Live from the Monona Terrace in Madison, Wisconsin, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Stephanie Lee. In this hour of What Do You Know, we talk the genius of geography with author Eric Weiner, plus all the news that isn't, and a round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who's thinking when he's 74... he's going to run for president, too, Michael Feldman.
Thank you. I accept the nomination, but I will not serve. Okay, there. I did like, actually, some of the headlines that came out of the Iowa results. The headline in the Des Moines Register, Jewish boy wows hog farmers. I thought it was a good one. Got the young hog farmers, you know. 4-H. Felt a 4-H burn. And on the Republican side, of course, the headline, Smog Monster Defeats Godzilla. Thought that was a good one, too. But you know it'll be back. Godzilla always comes back. Of course, the biggest winner was Mexico because they don't have to pay for that damn wall. They're worried about it. It's a lot of pesos, really, to build a wall across the whole thing. In other news, a North Korean satellite seriously resembles a Kia Soul. This just sent Cliff Huxtable loses his obstetrics license. That's long overdue. That is long overdue, if you ask me. I can't believe he's still practicing. There is no evidence to charge the Orange City teacher who helped prisoners escape, despite the fact that all three of them got A's. Okay. I vote to convict on that one. Toyota will pay back thousands of minority buyers who were overcharged, but not a dime for all the white guys who got the undercoating. Huh? Okay, anyhow, a study concludes if you use marijuana every day, be sure to wear a flower in your hair. But don't report to San Francisco until the Super Bowl is over. You don't want to be there. Ted Cruz's wife says he loves to sing show tunes to relax, and every day begins with Springtime for Hitler from the shower. Springtime for Hitler and Ted Cruz. Okay, let's see. Where was I? Drug gouger Martin Shkreli calls the House committee imbeciles, proving even a broken clock is right twice a day. I'm not taking sides. I'm just saying. Well, the Center for Disease Control tells young women drinking wine makes you pregnant. And a Long Island T means twins. Yes, sir. 99-million-year-old daddy long legs preserved with an additional long leg. A good reminder that if you have an erection lasting longer than 99 million years, see your doctor. Who hopefully is also preserved in amber, so he can do something for you. Page three. The first Playboy clothed issue came out, and it, as a result, returns full frontal nudity to hotel mirrors where it does not belong, ladies and gentlemen. Isn't that the worst thing about staying in a hotel? I mean, I don't need to see that. Why do they, you know, everywhere you turn, there you are. And every which way you turn, even worse. Anyhow, it's no longer in Playboy, so that's not a problem there. A feng shui expert, you know, feng shui expert says Donald Trump's mouth is in entirely the wrong place for him to be president. It's feng shui. All right, to put the Super Bowl madness in perspective, yes, a billion chicken wings will be consumed, but that's only a half a billion chickens. Not such a big deal. Peyton Manning can't lose because of winning with you can't lose for winning because of all the Pizza Hut franchises he owns and the takeout marijuana now back in Denver. He's a shoe-in, win or lose in this game. Gets the Lombardi trophy, you know it's going to end up being a bong, ladies and gentlemen. With much pizza consumed around it. And finally, and I mean that, the former Scott Walker, with a sizable debt from his botched presidential campaign, is seen on a traffic island with a sign reading, "Will work for $1 million. That's all the news that is, and thank you so much. And all the ships at sea. Did I miss a page? I thought I had more here. Actually, Springtime for Hitler, Scott Walker. No, that's okay. I'll save this just in case something comes up again. Of course, they're showing them on a quick ad lib. Got to write them down these days, you know. Eric Weiner has a new book out. He's the guy who wrote The Geography of Bliss. This one is The Geography of Genius. And we're going to find out if the geography of genius and bliss coincide at any point, and we're going to go there, really, because it'll be perfect. Smart people, and it'll be paradise. He's in Silver Spring, Maryland with us right now, and let's say hello to Eric. Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
So is there any place where the geography of genius and the geography of bliss coincide?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Very few. Most places of genius are not that happy, and most really happy places are not that genius-y.
Yeah.
Take Switzerland, for example. You know what Graham Greene infamously said about Switzerland?
No.
500 years of peace and stability, and what have they brought the world but the cuckoo clock?
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually a German invention, so the Swiss don't even get that.
You know, I think, wasn't that in The Third Man? I think, that line
correct.
Was in The Third Man.
Very good.
Thank
very
you very
good.
Much.
It was.
What do I win for that?
You win some Swiss chocolate. Congratulations. The point is it takes a little bit of unhappiness to be creative because I think all creative people and places are responding to a challenge. I really think creativity is a response to a challenge. And if you're living in paradise, wherever that might be, if it exists, you've got nothing to respond to, nothing to push against. So that's why there's very little overlap.
Being unhappy alone will not make you a genius, though, because I've tried that route. And...
that doesn't work. I'll tell you the best answer to that question for the connection between sadness and creativity was what I heard from researching my first book on happiness in Iceland. Mm-hmm. I met an Icelandic composer who was very successful, very creative, but he also seemed happy, and this was confusing me. You know, his name was Hilmar. So I said, Hilmar, what's the deal? You're both creative and happy. And he said something I'll never forget. He said, yeah, I'm basically happy, but I cherish my melancholia. And I like that, and I think that says a lot. All creative people, even if they're moderately happy, always have this side of them that is melancholic, and they don't reject it. They do cherish it.
Yeah, so melancholia is a good engine to have driving your quest for something new?
Some discontent, I would say, with the status quo, because what is creative genius but kind of rocking that boat? And if you're captain of the boat and perfectly happy with it, you're not gonna rock it.
See, so I see a real problem for this current age and those beyond, because now we would treat that as depression. Someone who's melancholic, it might actually be a good thing because he's thinking about all kinds of things and turning them over, and they're mostly depressing, let's face it. But now we'd be treated for depression, and we'd have no geniuses as a result.
That might be true, although I think the manic depressive genius, of which there are many examples throughout history, they do more creating in the manic phase than the depressive phase, to be honest. And I think when you're truly depressed and you're Brian Wilson, you can't get out of bed, you're not producing much. So I think cherishing your melancholy is good, but giving into it all the time, not so good.
Yeah, yeah. And Brian Eno, the biggest genius currently in the world. This is what I get from your writing. You keep mentioning Brian Eno no matter where you are. You're in China, you're in Austria.
I know, he kept coming up.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about, I talk about Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground being an example of what I call a multiplier. Now, their first album sold like 30,000 copies, which is not very much.
No.
But as Brian Eno said, everyone who bought one of those 30,000 copies started a band. And he's joking, but not really. And
as he famously said,
yes, exactly.
Like
so Lou Reed's influence on the rock scene is much greater than just the albums he sold. And throughout history, you see that. You see these people who
are multipliers.
Yeah, exactly.
I really enjoyed the book, and I will say that I was disappointed in Greece and China somewhat. You know why? Because some of it is, or you go back to Egypt or something, and you say, where are they now? There's so much of that feeling,
these are
ancient cultures and so brilliant and so advanced, and what happened? But where that all changes is when you go to Scotland.
Is
that your favorite part of the? To me, that it must be because that's a magnificent chapter.
Yeah, and it's pleasantly surprising. I think. Mm-hmm. Not too many people actually know about the Scottish Enlightenment, or as it's sometimes called, the Scotch Enlightenment, because they drank an awful lot. But it had a profound influence on this country. A lot of the founding fathers visited there. Benjamin Franklin was a frequent visitor. Thomas Jefferson loved Edinburgh. And we don't know that so much. And it was so unlikely, because it was what did one historian say? It was dirty, poor, quarrelsome, and alcoholic just before its golden age, and it was perched on the edge of the world. And it was so unlikely, but they rose to the occasion, and for about 50 years, there were no more brilliant minds in the world than those to be found in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Yeah. So how did that happen? That's a good question, right? Because it seems totally unlikely that enlightenment would occur in Scotland at that time.
One is they had that port in Glasgow, and they were open to the outside world, and they went back and forth to France, not so much England so much, and they imported ideas. It was a crossroads for people going to the colonies and going to mainland Europe. So all these places, including Edinburgh, had that sort of cross-fertilization. And they kind of had a chip on their shoulder, They had something to prove to the English who had just conquered them, essentially, that they were every bit as good, and that chip has been helpful in lots of places, including Silicon Valley, when you have something to prove. And I think the biggest thing is, I was sort of joking about the Scotch, but not really, because they would drink and they would engage in something called flighting. Have you heard of flighting, F-L-Y-T-I-N-G?
Yeah, not till your book.
Yeah, okay, but now you have. It's an old Scots word, and it means, and I quote here, ritual humiliation of your opponent through verbal violence.
I can relate to it, but I didn't know it existed.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what your show's about. But,
somewhat.
Yeah, and when I heard that, the Scottish historian who told me, I said, well, Tom, it sounds brutal. And he says, oh, it is, with a glint in his eye. But the point is that you could talk about anything openly and freely with your friends and your enemies. And after a good flighting session, all parties would head down to the local pub for a pint or five, hard feelings. And, that kind of freewheeling conversation, an interdisciplinary conversation where even if you're not an economist, you could mouth off about economics because the field had just been formed by Adam Smith and it was still young. And I, as I delved into Scotland, I thought, wow, I wish we were more like that today.
Yeah. And isn't part of it, though, too, the whole Scottish it can't be done philosophy?
Yeah.
They always start off with the premise that it can't be done.
Right, and then they do it anyway. It's Captain Kirk's, saying to Scotty, we need more warp drive. And Scotty says, it can't be done, Captain, and then he does it anyway. They have a very practical strain of genius in Scotland. They're very much into improving everything. And you saw it in medicine. It was, if you were sick in the late 1700s, you wanted to be in Edinburgh because they had the best medicine in the world and the best medical school in the world.
Yeah. And how did that happen?
Again, I think it was that combining the practical and the theoretical, and medicine's perfect for this because you need to have a theoretical understanding of how the body works, but then you need to apply that. And they were like, you know, why are we sending our students to learn medicine in London or in the colonies? Let's build a school here. And they did. And their graduates include, well, years later, but Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, creator of Sherlock Holmes, was a graduate of the medical school. And they, you know, next time you have surgery and you don't feel any pain because of the anesthesia, you can thank the Scots.
Yeah. And who was it who invented the anesthetic?
Well, it was a doctor named James Simpson who discovered chloroform as an antiseptic, anesthetic. And the way he did that was, it was actually at a dinner party at his house, and he invited a bunch of friends over, and he offered them a decanter of this strange-looking liquid. And apparently, if you're a Scot and you're offered a liquid of any kind, you don't turn it down. So, true story, they all drank it, and the next morning, the maid found everyone passed out but still alive. And Simpson knew he was onto something.
Yeah.
You know, if he had used any less, they wouldn't have felt the effect. If he had used any more, he would have killed all his friends.
Right.
So they got lucky, too.
So that could not have happened anywhere else but Scotland.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about genius. It really is rooted in time and place. It grows in certain soils. And that's what my book's about is, you know, what was in the water back then and, you know, can we bottle it?
Yeah, and actually, you know, in Scotland, they didn't really make any advances until the British annexed them. So, you know, maybe...
I know. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
I mean, you would think that they would have just, you know...
So the next big genius hotspot, Crimea. Right? Because the Russians annexed them, so you got to expect big things from Crimea next is what I'm thinking.
You never know, but yeah. I'm placing my money on Estonia, actually.
Yeah, Estonia?
No. Did you know that Skype was invented in Estonia?
No, I didn't. I thought that was a joke.
And it, don't laugh. If Estonia were a stock, I'd buy it.
Yeah. Well, where then? Now, Scotland seems to be unique. Oh, by the way, and Scottish writers. You got to love Scottish writers, too. Even the modern-day ones as well, because they're so down and out, and yet they're up.
Exactly. They've got that combination of pessimism and optimism.
Oh, a horrible pessimism and degradation and down as far down as you can get. And I love it. You know, it's great reading. But then somehow it's still up. It's still a positive in the end somehow.
That you just summed up the Scott character beautifully.
Yeah. I should really... You feel like you're partly Scottish, don't you? I got the feeling from what you read.
A little bit.
Yeah, is there a Scot Scottish in the family line? Somewhere?
No Scots in the family. I'm probably part Scottish, part Indian, because that's the other country I love is India.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if we just became the countries we visited, or at least the ones we wanted to?
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Well, this geography thing is a good thing for you, because you get to deduct all your travel expenses, right? Because you're writing a book about where you're going. Is that how it started?
Yes,
basically?
It's true. And if the IRS is listening, I do have receipts. I get receipts for everything. I know how to ask for a receipt in like 17 languages. Is all I can say.
How do you get in to see everybody? Like you go to China and you see Jack Ma, who's got Alibaba, this guy, financial genius.
Have you heard of the term Guan Xi?
No. What is that?
Okay, that's in the book too.
Yeah.
it is essentially connections.
Oh yeah.
And you need Guan Xi. You need Guan Xi to get anything done in China.
Yeah.
So I knew a friend of a friend of a friend of Jack Ma, which was my inn. You've got to do that. And he was happy to talk to me because I wasn't interested in his $27 billion or reporting about his company, Alibaba. I was interested in what he had to say about Chinese creativity, which he was happy to talk about.
Yeah, but did he really say anything? I mean, I tried to get something out of that, but I'm not sure that I did. Did you learn something from Jack Ma about creativity?
First of all, what I learned about him is that he's sort of a hybrid of American ingenuity and Chinese conservatism, if you will. He grew up just when China was opening up to the outside world, and he would hang out at the Shangri-La Hotel and offer free services as a tour guide in exchange for English lessons from the foreign visitors.
Oh, okay.
And I think he must have been infected in a way with that American gumption.
Because the
company started as very American. Now, he is as confused as everyone in a way about why China isn't more inventive today, since it has this long history of inventiveness. He thinks, you know, he told me, and it was a surprising answer, that the Chinese need to return to their spiritual roots, Confucianism, Taoism, Buddhism. And that surprised me because usually you can't talk about religion in China and get away with it unless you're worth $27 billion.
Yeah, that helps. That helps anywhere, I think.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Its freedom of speech is there if you can afford it.
Yeah, and didn't he also blame the schools? This exam-ridden Chinese educational system.
The exam system, which began centuries ago as a sort of meritocratic thing, you know, no longer could you rely on your connections, you had to do well in the exams, has become sort of, well, it's become an obsession for young Chinese and Korean students, really. They cram for these exams, and they learn everything by rote, and talk about teaching to the test. That's all they do. And so there is this innovation gap is what they call it in China, and they wring their hands about it. And I was watching a TV show on Chinese television in English so I can understand it, and they were... I had a panel on what should we do about the innovation gap, and one person said, well, we need a government innovation program, the way the government has a high-speed rail or highway program, and everyone harumphed in agreement, but that's not the way these things work. Very rarely does the government dictate innovation and say we're going to be innovative, and everyone is. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Have they set up something? Like, wasn't it in Russia where they set up, they wanted to set up a Sunnyvale, California.
Yeah, well,
Russian.
Not just Russia, but all over the world.
Yeah, so it must be happening.
There have been hundreds of attempts to replicate Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And they all fail because it's a culture, really, and you can't just transplant a culture.
But, I mean, isn't sort of a cliche to say about China is not inventive? Because, first of all major inventions of the world came from China originally. And obviously,
But in
recent years, maybe not. They started copying and selling that sort of thing. But aren't they past the copying thing now, where it is once again all the stuff is coming from China now?
Or is that not true? Yeah, it's not entirely true in terms of patents and real creative breakthroughs. What they tell me in China is they bemoan the fact that everything's made in China, but very little is invented there. You know, where's the Steve Jobs of China?
Yeah.
I suppose Jack Ma may come the closest.
Yeah.
But I think they may be on the verge of something. And look, the Chinese take a cyclical view of history in a way that we don't. We have a very linear view.
Yeah.
So they've had these up and down cycles over centuries, and they take the long view. And, you know, don't think that just because the place is up now, it's going to stay up, or if it's down, it's going to stay down. Silicon Valley may not last forever. I know people find that shocking, but look at Detroit, other cities.
And then you go to India, and India is what they say, where chaos begins or something, right? Or chaos reigns.
In their creation myth, in the beginning there was chaos, and it was good.
Yeah.
And there still is chaos in India if you visit it and walk down the street. But Calcutta was a really hot spot for creative genius for a while, and I realize that's kind of surprising. But what
came out of Calcutta in terms
of? Well, the first non-Westerner to win the Nobel Prize for Literature, a man named Tagore, Rabindranath Tagore, who's a real Renaissance man in every way. A lot of science, more books were published than any city in the world except for London, tons of literature as well. It's interesting because it really speaks to this connection between messiness, you know, chaos, and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you a neat desk person or a messy desk person?
Yeah. You're asking me, or is that just a general question?
It's for you. Yeah, it's a question.
I'm a no-desk person.
No desk?
I just write notes on my lap, usually.
Okay, are the notes neat, or are they kind
No, of no, you want to see them? I can show you what I got here on this. On our discussion, and no one could ever decipher that. So.
Well, studies show that if you're surrounded with a little bit of mess and chaos, you'll think more creatively than in a neat, perfectly pristine office setting.
Yeah, because you have to figure out what you're doing among all that.
Yeah, I guess so. Look at Einstein's desk was a mess, never mind his hair. Beethoven was a total slob. He kept getting kicked out of his apartments in the end of it. He was a landlord's nightmare. Mm-hmm. You know, he would be so into composing his music that if he needed a bath, he would just douse himself with water right in the living room. And they didn't really like that. But yeah, there's and
you can yell at him all you want. He's deaf. He's not going to hear it.
Exactly. Yeah. But the ladies loved him. He was a real ladies' man.
That's how
Beethoven was. Yeah. So a little bit of messiness is actually good, because if you think about it, when you're being creative, you have to sort of enter this chaotic state, what one neuroscientist calls an I-don't-know state. And your EEG actually gets chaotic when you're, say, presenting with a new odor or something you haven't been exposed to before.
Yeah.
So between patterns is chaos, and chaos can be good.
Yeah.
So here's the chaos.
Let's go back to Calcutta for just a minute.
Yeah.
You do digressions very well, I got to say. In your book too, because you're in India, and you suddenly you're quoting Brian Eno and how to apply it, you know. So that's good. I like that. I'm also very digressive. Don't you think that's a sign of genius too? Digressive.
Oh, absolutely.
Tangential thinking has got to be.
Yeah, your mind cannot be contained in corridors. Yeah.
No, not mine anyway.
Yeah, if
can't keep my mind in a corridor.
If there's one takeaway from the book, it's that you are a true genius.
Yeah. In India, is India perhaps the spot where genius, the next big enlightenment, will come from?
I'm pretty bullish on India.
Yeah.
Along with Estonia, I think
Estonia.
India has the freedom of discourse that China doesn't, and even though they are behind China economically. Mm-hmm. I think they could catch up, and they could catch up in the creative realms. They've already demonstrated that. Mm. The software work they do there, a lot of that is quite creative. I'm pretty optimistic about India. But, you know, it's really everyone wants to know where the next, you know, golden age is going to be. And, you know, if I knew that, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be on my yacht in the Mediterranean sipping a drink with an umbrella. Or maybe I would still have time.
How would that enrich you, just knowing that? I don't quite.
Oh well, if you could, first of all, you can buy the right stocks.
Oh, okay.
Second of all, if you could engineer a place of genius, that's the question everyone wants to know: is can you make a place like that?
Yeah.
And I wish I could say yes, but the answer is no. But you can do certain things. You cannot be North Korea, for instance. That's helpful. Don't be North Korea, because it's not going to be the next place of genius, because it's a closed system. You know.
Yeah. What about, you know, individual genius? Now, that, does that still, is it just Elon Musk, the only one that we have who's an actual certified genius, contemporary style? Or, I mean, where is there such a thing anymore? You know, because that's sort of our Western ideal, whatever, the individual genius. Does that exist?
It's a legend and a myth, and we love the idea of it so much, don't we, that Elon Musk somehow just comes from outer space, literally, and lands here. But, of course, that's not the case. And, you know, have you ever wondered why our geniuses are all in the high-tech field? Why is it Elon Musk and Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah.
Where are the Beethovens and Mozarts? You know, did the sort of gene pool for classical music dry up?
Yeah.
And the answer is no. The answer is simply, you know, as I... can I quote from Plato on your show? Is
please,
that okay?
Please do.
Okay, you probably encourage it. Yeah, what Plato said is, what is honored in the country will be cultivated there.
Yeah.
And that says it all. What
so
do
you,
we
you,
honor?
You get the genius you deserve.
Exactly. Yeah. And we don't care much for classical music, so we don't get a Beethoven or Mozart, but we care an awful lot for these gadgets and for electric cars, so we get an Elon Musk or a Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't come from outer space. They're very much grown in our backyard.
Yeah, but also, how depressing is that? That's pretty depressing, because there are all these other areas that could really use a genius. And, you know,
right?
Let's say global warming. Where is the global warming genius?
Well, is it depressing, or are you just depressive? Because
both.
You know, we can change, right? If we look at genius as sort of a common enterprise that we're all in. And if we care enough about climate change, then we'll see a climate change genius. I really do believe that.
So I
would take away, I'll be a little more optimistic about it.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
You're
helping.
To.
No, you're helping a lot. I appreciate
that. I think to do anything creative, like write a book, for instance. You can't be a total nihilist. You have to be a little bit optimistic, or why bother writing it? You know, you have to believe if you put pen to paper that someone will read it, and that before you know it, someday, if you're lucky, you'll, you know, be on Wisconsin Public Radio talking about it.
Yeah.
You can dream.
I noticed Wisconsin didn't turn up in the book.
Yeah, that was
in terms of geography of genius. I didn't see anything.
Yeah,
Stevens Point or...
Well, there'll be a follow-up
Madison,
book,
let's say.
All about Wisconsin.
Follow-up, yeah.
Yeah, about. I'm sorry for that oversight.
Maybe in the geography of cheese when that comes up.
There's an idea for a book.
Of cheeses.
You around the world.
Geography
yeah.
of cheeses.
Yeah. You know about the cheesemakers, Blessed Are the Cheesemakers, from
no.
Monty Python's movie. Yeah,
oh.
They said, Blessed Are the Cheesemakers. What's so special about the cheesemakers? He said, Peacemakers. Oh. I've got no more. I have one more cheese joke. Can I throw it in?
Please
yeah.
do.
Did you hear about the explosion in the fromage factory? Debris was everywhere. Ooh. Ooh.
Well, I hate to end that way, but we're going to.
Oh, that's the big...
Eric, the book is called The Geography of Genius. Thanks so much for talking with us. It was very interesting, and the book is a really... You should pick it up and read it. Because you could be a genius and discover it through this book. Thanks, Eric.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
My pleasure. Geography of Genius, Eric Weiner. Yes. And he's really smart. I don't know if he's a genius, actually, too. He's very smart. Geography of Bliss is his other book. What else? Man seeks God. Okay. A lot to think about there with Eric.
Oh, yeah. Man bites dog.
God, not dog.
I know. I'm being diverse. Okay. Divergent or something.
Yeah, you're a real genius. I've never heard genius around here except
okay,
as
Brainiac.
A, you know, ironically. I've been called a genius, but never, you know. When it wasn't ironic. Okay, genius.
Well, wow, who says that?
I don't know. Sounds like me, though, doesn't it? I don't know. Could have been my wife. Anyhow, how are you? Pretty good, then?
Good. I'm very good, yeah.
Yeah.
Feel good.
Yeah. Any musical geniuses that you want today, living today?
Living today.
That you, yeah, are living in the last couple centuries?
Well, I don't know.
Who would you cite as a genius?
For our modern jazz, I don't know, we'd probably say maybe Charlie Parker.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Thanks. But, just wanted to get that in there for on behalf of music, other than Beethoven.
But I'm sure there's other people, too, but, you know.
Yeah. And you're pretty darn good.
Yeah, but that's not
your
genius.
Writing is getting pretty darn good.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
Increasingly good.
Yeah, well, after you've done it for a long time, you kind of learn. I'm slow, but I eventually get it, you know.
That's what she said. Okay. Go ahead, please.
Okay, with that.
Yeah. That's why I'm a genius. I know, thank you. How's everybody? Pretty good then? Huh? Doing pretty good then? Yeah? Oh, all right then. Are you getting it? Now we got you listening to the show on the radio. Is it on?
I don't have my radio on now.
You turned it off?
Pretty good now.
Okay, all right. Well, let me just tune in every so often. Let me know.
Okay.
You know, when you're on the air, you have no idea if you actually are on the air. So it's kind of a frightening thought. We have someone here from Iowa, and I think they deserve equal time for all they've suffered. I think from that's you, yeah, okay, Cedar Rapids, right?
Yeah.
The Vander Veldens,
yeah.
Yep. Are you a Vander and you're a Veldin? Pretty much how it works. What are the odds on that happening? A Vander meeting a Veldin. All right, let me just come down here to meet the Vander Veldins from Cedar Rapids. And are you feeling pretty relieved that this is all over now, the caucuses? And... Did you caucus?
Yes.
You did? You both caucused? Did you tell each other what you caucused when you caucused? You have that kind of relationship? Can I get you to stand up? Yeah. Yeah.
That Scottish version sounded a lot better, though. The harassing each other candidates.
Verbally, you do that, too?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so does this go on too long, the whole Iowa caucuses?
Very long, yes. We need to change it. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is, though. We were hoping you could help.
Yeah. But you guys just do it for the money, right? Doesn't Iowa make a lot of money on this whole thing? And you put up with it, right?
We didn't make any money.
Didn't you get to pay? I thought everyone gets like $50,000 cash to let people run through their yards and put up signs. And
I think it's the TV stations that make all the money.
Yeah. Because we were out in Iowa not too... When it was all starting or something, and they were talking about millions of dollars that come in. But it's mostly for TV buys and stuff.
Right, right. That must have been about 3 years ago when you were there and it started.
Yeah. Almost that long. And I don't. Is it a good system even? I mean, I don't quite understand it. It's like you put a stone in a ball jar. According to which stone you put in the ball jar, that's the candidate that you're voting for? That how it works? Or did I get that wrong?
It's kind of similar. The parties do it a little different. Whether it's herding of people or tickets in baggies, that was kind of, yeah.
Tickets in baggies, so I wasn't too far off.
And anybody could get a ticket. I mean, you couldn't figure out where you're supposed to sign in, and they handed out, like, ripped off pieces of notebook paper. And you couldn't.
You put those in baggies.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm starting to relate to it. This sounds like something I could do.
Amateur night.
Yeah. And then, so I understand they flipped the coin for Hillary. And
yeah, I think she won more coins than Bernie.
So it's not a perfect system, is what you're saying.
Well, you have to break a tie somehow.
Yeah. But it's kind of good because it breaks down the system where people actually people get out there and talk it over and.
It does make it more local. Yes, but the talking is sometimes a little one-sided.
I saw Sarah Palin do her thing down there. I thought that was a bit...
Yeah.
Hysterical is what I thought it was. I don't know exactly what the... All right, well, thank you for being... you guys are okay after the experience? And
we survived, yes.
Waiting for next year? Next time around? Is it 4 years now?
I think I'm moving.
The Vander Veldins, ladies and gentlemen. Lori and
Tony.
Nice to meet you both. Thank you. I appreciate it. How are you? Pretty good?
Good, yeah.
Did you just arrive here, or were you out somewhere? Just came back? Did you just slipped in here?
Well, I've been here the whole time.
You've been the whole time?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Okay. What's your name?
Hillary.
Hillary. Do you identify with any particular candidates running for president?
No, but I ask that at work all the time.
You do?
Yes.
Do you just assume because you're a Hillary, you're for Hillary?
Well, I do customer service on the phone, and so I tell people my name.
Can you make up a name? I never got a real name on a phone thing like that. Customer service, you use your real name?
I do.
You should just use a different name. Can't you use a different name? Or don't let you do that.
I didn't really think to ask before I started using my name. Because, you know, I started a while ago before any other Hillarys became very popular in the state.
Windy Storm. Hi, this is Windy Storm, customer service.
My favorite is that sometimes there's a person at a dealership that we work with who's named Clinton. So I say, hello, my name is Hillary. And he goes, hi, Hillary, I'm Clinton. How you doing?
Well, you should know how he's doing, I guess, but you never do with him. And so you take complaints or something?
Oh, yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. How do you handle that? Pretty well? You don't take it personally, do you?
Well, I try not to, especially the ones about Hillary.
Yeah, that you can't avoid, but...
I'll get everyone's opinion on that, but...
What sort of business is it? What sort of...
Oh, we do luxury appliances.
Luxury appliances. Would I have one of those?
Maybe.
A luxury appliances. So it's an appliance that I can't afford.
Yeah, you got...
A really good toaster oven or something.
You got a spare $16,000 for a refrigerator?
Oh, it's like the...
Yeah, the really nice ones.
What do they call those?
The Sub-Zeros, made in Madison.
Yeah. See, I didn't even know that. And people complain about those? What's wrong with... Shouldn't be anything wrong with a $16,000 refrigerator.
Oh, no, it even does your taxes.
Thanks, Hillary.
You're welcome.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming. All right, we are... We wish you could talk us. No. Jay Giles Band is on oldies stations. I don't see what that's... And Jay Giles fans here, actually, Jay Giles. You are? Did you know that they're playing him now on oldies stations? That's sad? Here's a man that brought a tear to his eye. Just think about... Who wrote this? Let me see. Who wrote this card about Jay Giles? Sandra Lynn.
Here.
Way over there. Do you like Jay Giles?
No, here. I don't.
You don't? Centerfold? What don't you like about Centerfold?
I keep hearing it on the radio on the oldie station, you know. And
so it's in maximum play right now, Centerfold. Isn't that good?
Could be. I like their earlier stuff, not the older stuff.
What do you prefer to Centerfold?
Must Have Got Lost is one of their songs.
Oh, I thought what you were going to say Must Have Got... Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's older.
Okay. Let's do Centerfold as a group. I forget how it goes. I don't... Okay, sorry. Jay got
it. Feeling.
Yeah, okay. What? I was just getting to the meat of the cards here. I got distracted by Hillary being in the audience.
Sorry, Michael. It's time to play the quiz.
Okay. Right. I'll get to the rest of you in a minute, so don't feel too comfortable. I'm coming back here. And we're going to play a round of the What Do You Know quiz, because that's what we do here. We play a round of the What Do You Know quiz every so often and usually run out of time to do it, so you can't help but win. That's the beauty of it. Before we can play the quiz, however... We have to know who can and cannot, yes, come over here, is what I'm trying to say, participate in the quiz. That's right, it's time for the four disclaimers, for legal purposes only, and you are?
D.
D.
Okay.
From Sturgeon Bay.
D from Sturgeon Bay, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to hand it to you.
Okay.
I'm going to get out of your way.
The four disclaimers. Number one. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Number two, in fact, I think they should raise the minimum age for president to 74. Number three, persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. And number four, all opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done. You don't keep that. That's in lieu of payment. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to play the What Do You Know quiz. All right, I think young fella back there, well... All right, you want it more than he does. Come on. Come on. Yes, come on. I'm sorry, but you're just more excited. It's the same line as you. We'll get you next time.
All right.
Because you were much more excited than he was. He was quick.
I'm an exciting person.
Are you?
Yeah.
Exciting or excitable?
Excitable.
Or both. You can be both. You can be both. I'll give you your choice.
Okay, both
is good. Your name is?
Joanne.
Joanne, and where are you from, Joanne?
Janesville.
Joanne from Janesville, ladies and gentlemen. Joanne, give me one good reason why you should play this quiz.
Because I'm really great at geography.
There's no geography. Very little geography, honestly. Other subjects good for you, too?
Sure.
Okay, come on, Joanne, because you're great at all subjects, is what I'm thinking. Come join us up here. Have a seat there, if you would, right next to the emu. It's not real. Settle in there. That
is
water is still
vodka?
Fresh.
Yeah.
Oh. No, it's not vodka. But I like the way you think already. That's good. Are you comfortable in there? Cozy?
Sure.
All right, make yourself. Get this here so we can hear from you. And what are you doing these days? Or
I sell business furniture.
Business
Does
furniture.
Does anybody need any?
No. Who needs business furniture? Put your hand up here. You got? Did you bring your cards with you?
Oh, sure.
And pass them out. We'll just pass them out. And what's the biggest item in business furniture to date? What's moving the quickest?
What can't you keep
in stock?
It's called benching.
I'm sorry?
They've gone now from workstations to benching. Actually, it's just a big, long line of people separated by a little bit of...
Oh, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That way you can
fit
more people
in
into the
ship
space.
Or something.
It's like prison.
Yeah.
Well, you can fit more people into the space.
Is there an oar involved in this? No, there's a hole in the wall and an oar. Benching.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
That's what you're selling? Well, I mean, I don't mean you personally, but I mean, that's what's...
Well, there's more of it in Madison than Janesville.
They're benching in Madison?
They're benching, yeah.
Over at Epic or something? They got just benches and people on the oars through the...
Probably, yeah.
I was shocked. I mean, a cubicle is bad enough, but a bench...
All you need is a work surface and a computer... Yeah. And a phone.
And you have to stand at your bench, or you sit
on
the bench?
Well, that's really become the big thing, is standing while you work.
Standing at your bench.
Mm-hmm. You're supposed to stand at least 2 hours a day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Especially if you don't have a chair.
Benching, no bench. That's what it's called.
Huh?
Benching, no bench. You got to stand. Never mind.
Okay. What? So these are companies are going to benching now as their format. So cubicles are out, benches are in.
Yes.
This is very shocking.
Well, I'm glad I could enlighten you on
this. Are there some benches that are better than other benches, or?
Well, the ones that we sell.
Yeah, good benches, nice bench. Are they adjustable benches? You can, because you raise yours and everyone's go up, right?
Well, yeah, we need to make them adjustable so you can stand up if you want.
Yeah, but if your bench goes up, doesn't everybody's bench go up? Because it's just one bench.
No, you can do it so each person can adjust it to their best spot.
You can adjust your part of the bench?
Sure.
That's a cool bench, at least. It's good. Adjustable. Adjustable bench. There in the ship's
the
hold
best ones
as
are adjustable.
Rowing for sure. Okay, well, John, that's very interesting, and I'm sure you get a lot of calls on that, so keep your cards handy here. Someone out there who plays along with you, know how the quiz works, Joanne?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about how it works, anyhow.
Well,
so
I do
be fine.
Listen to the show, but...
You don't?
I do.
Oh, you do? Okay. But it never works? Is that what you're saying? So someone out there calls in, plays along with you, and it's collaborative. And so, okay,
right.
You got it in
okay.
various categories. It'll
we
all,
have to, yeah, okay.
It's easy as pie. And how are you doing, Stephanie?
I'm good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
And then, so how do they do this then, if they want to play with Joanne on this quiz?
Yeah, so if people want to play the quiz, they're going to pick up the phone and dial 800-942-5669 and answer this qualifying question.
Oh, right out of the news, the Dutch police are training eagles. For what purpose? Dutch police are training eagles even as we speak. For what purpose? Dutch police, eagles, purpose. Keywords. Matthew is in Balsam Lakes, Wisconsin. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
Where is Balsam Lake exactly, Matthew?
It's just north of, St. Croix Falls.
You don't even know, do you? I mean, it's that remote.
No, you know where St. Croix Falls is, right?
On the west there?
Yeah, by Osceola.
By Osceola, okay.
And yeah, we're about a half hour, 45 minutes northeast of that.
Wow, I didn't think there was anything.
Yeah, there's...
after Osceola. Okay, cool. What are you doing up there?
I'm working on a cabin.
Oh, you're building a cabin out there, huh? Good, nice time of year to do that, Matthew.
Yeah, well,
did you ever hear of summer?
I'm inside it right now.
Oh, you are. You got the first part up, so that's good. Doing the inside
we're doing
work. Yeah, how's it going? Pretty good?
Yeah, not too bad. Doing some live edge.
Some what edge?
Handrails for what? The staircase.
What edge? What edge are you doing?
That?
Were you doing some what edge?
Live edge?
Live
handrails?
Edge?
Handrails?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I knew that. Matthew, the Dutch police are training eagles for what use?
To take drones out of the sky.
Oh, you're too smart, Matthew. Good. Take a break here. You've been at this for months, I'm sure. Is this cabin going to be for yourself, or are you going to?
No, it's what I do for a living.
Oh, you do? Okay, nice. Sounds nice. Nice, nice. Is it on the water, by the way?
It is right on the water. I went swimming all summer.
You did? Really? Okay. When you should have been working, you'd be done by now. Matthew, this is Joanne. She's your partner.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Joanne. Good to meet you.
All right, so you are a team right now. You work together in these various categories that you'll now hear from Stephanie.
The categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Matthew, pick the first one.
We'll do odds and ends.
Odds and ends. This could be anything. Is resting bitch face real?
I have no idea, Joanne.
I'll just see if he's reaching for the button. No, he's not. He's blowing his nose. So, okay.
Can you say it again?
Yes. I hear that? Let me say it again. Resting bitch face. Is it a real thing?
What do you think, Joanne?
Talking over.
Yeah, why not?
Well, I think, yeah, probably. Why not?
Yeah. Kristen Stewart has it, if you're wondering what that is. Probably the best example. Kanye West has it.
I'm in. Yeah.
Queen Elizabeth has it. So?
I say yes.
Yes, obviously it's real. The Queen has it. Come on. Jennifer Aniston does not have it. She's probably the only person who does not have it ever. Okay.
That's one, right? And the remaining categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned at school, and science.
Joanne, what would you like?
Let's do places.
Places. Let's see if that comes up in this category. No, it doesn't. Percentage of people in Eau Claire who didn't even try to keep their New Year's resolutions. Eau Claire. People who didn't even...
Do you get a percentage, Michael?
Didn't even bother to keep their resolutions. They just made them and that was it. 1969 or 11?
I'll say 69.
Joanne? He's pretty certain.
He's pretty certain?
Pretty certain.
I'd go with him then.
Okay, 69. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kidding? So clear. Another thing to do. You gotta get the Menards for one thing. What?
That's two, right? Okay. And the remaining categories are current events, people, things you should have learned in school, and science.
Okay, Matthew, for all the money. Come on. You can do it.
What's the science?
Science, it is. Okay, science. Besides its many other qualities, the Venus flytrap can do one of the following. Can it count, smell, or walk?
It can count.
He's so certain.
He's so certain, I'll go with him.
He can count. How did you know that, Matthew?
Ira Flato.
Ira Flato. Thank you, Ira Flato, who is a Venus flytrap, by the way. It's actually Ira flytrap. A lot of people don't realize that.
Joanne, Jimmy the Groundhog has a firm spring is just around the corner. You can get ready to don your chef's ball cap, the hat for the ultimate grillmeister from the Duluth Trading Company. And then stop counterproductive habits with Peter Bruckman's book, 4 Seconds, which he claims is all the time you need to get the results you want from Harper One. Get tips and steps to becoming a successful entrepreneur with your crazy idea from Robert Fishbone's Selling the Scream from On the Wall Productions. And learn the craft of literary nonfiction by following Philip Pates to Show and to Tell from Free Press. Matthew, make your mornings come alive with perky and robust Steep and Brew Breakfast Blend Coffee and soothe afternoon cares with rich and smooth Costa Rican Terrazoo from Madison's Steep and Brew Coffee. Coffee done right. And then from the place with the goats on the roof, make world-famous Swedish pancakes with mix from Al Johnson's Swedish restaurant and boutique in Door County, including a jar of wild Swedish lingonberries. And many more prizes, which we'll tell you more about later. Congratulations to both of you.
Thanks, Michael. We love you.
Thank you. Thanks, Matthew. Hang on. Make sure you get all that stuff.
Hey, Feldman fans. Come catch a broadcast of What Do You Know live next week here at Monona Terrace. Michael's guest will be Bob's Burger star and comedian Eugene Merman. Ticket information is available at notmuch.com.
Oh, yeah.
Looking to keep the laughs going? Click over to notmuch.com. You can join our Facebook family, keep up with Michael's tweets, and play our online quiz. It's all available all the time at notmuch.com. Michael. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international.
Oh, yeah.
This is PRI, Public Radio International.
Okay. A little more. Yeah. Where's the whooper? Who does the whooping? You got a whoop? Okay. This one is enough. You don't want to sound like it's sports. I got things to do.
Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.
Say that again.
That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Stephanie Lee. In this hour of What Do You Know, it's 50 years of Super Bowl history with Slate's Justin Peters, plus a new batch of Thanks for the Memos, all the news that is, and a round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who reminds you in 50,000 years the Super Bowl will be just a pile of toppled pillars like Stonehenge, Michael Feldman.
Wait a second. Wait a second, I'm not ready yet. Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie Lee. You know, each week at this time, we read actual memos sent in by actual listeners. Okay. And what do we got here? Let's see. Am I going to do this one? Mm-hmm. I should read these before, I guess. All right, anyhow. Here's this one. It reads as follows. Hi, everyone. I want to tell you how proud I am of each and every one of you. I feel community coming together, and I feel a different kind of energy around here lately. I'd love to, some feedback from you. Also, I will be out of town a lot in the near future, so I'll need help for desk shifts and things in general. I know it's a lot to ask of you to check in your own classes, but I have a feeling that it'll be a common task while I am gone. Each trip is costing me a small fortune, so I really can't afford to pay peeps to pick up my slack. That being said, I'm sorry that this responsibility falls on you. Boy, that sounded out so nice. How proud I am of each and every one of you. Okay, I'm not going to leave you with that one there. How about the trash area crossing? Dear homeowners, it reads, the trash area has become somewhat of a nightmare. We want to remind everyone to place your trash in the bins or dumpster and not on top as a waste removal company will not take bins that have items left on top. Also, please take 2 minutes and call for bulk pickup. 311 will come and pick up most items and Christmas trees. 311, isn't that where you call when you have an emergency? What? 911. Oh, God, if I get that wrong, it'd be terrible. Going forward, we will ID the trash left out and send notice of possible fines to those homeowners who trash the trash area. If you have renters, please make sure they follow the rules as well. The homeowner will be violated if their occupants are throwing trash. This is pretty strong language. Outside of the bins and have their bulk items behind. So you will be violated in your bulk items, ladies and gentlemen, if you do not follow these things. Thank you so much for those memos. And they weren't very good. But I didn't write them, so I don't feel responsible. From all the news that is, because we like to do that because isn't doesn't usually work. All the news that is, and mostly it's around here. Highway Department issued some snowplow rules reminder. We're in the snowplow season now. And God love them, I'm so glad to see that plow come through, you know, because the only thing between you and ever seeing the rest of your life again ever is the snowplow. And those guys work, and they go, a lot of times they go in the middle of the night, and thank God for snowplow guys. But it's there's some etiquette involved, and the Highway Department wants you to know the etiquette involving snowplows. The Highway Department has received many reports of snow plowing across various roads and highways in the county. According to county ordinance, it is illegal to place materials such as snow in the travel way of any road or highway. That's for the plows to do, ladies and gentlemen, not your job. This activity may also cause an accident to happen. Please consider this as you remove the snow from your driveway this winter. Also, I'd like to point out the people who are blowing snow into my face when I'm walking on the sidewalk. Let's rethink that. Also, the traveling public is reminded to exercise caution and drive with care. Always a good thing. Clearing a small patch to see through a windshield or rear window is not sufficient. In winter weather, and you see them all the time, you know, a little eye hole here and maybe one eye hole here, and nothing here or here, because what could happen from that direction? Nothing. Or behind you, who cares? Unbelievable, really. Clearing a small patch to see through a windshield or rear window is not sufficient. In winter weather, the driving hazard that's even worse than snow and ice is your inability to see what's ahead. To help with this visibility, remember to clear the snow and ice from the surface of your vehicle. Be careful and go slow. Use courtesy and common sense. It is also very important, and this is crucial here, not to crowd the plow.
No.
Okay? Do not crowd the plow. Pass plows with extreme caution and never drive in a snow plow's cloud. Those of you who are from Florida or someplace and living here now for some reason, please keep that in mind. So that's the snow plow reminder. Don't crowd the plow, number one. Some other news around here. They had to rename the River Falls. Has got a new fitness room. They had to rename it because of the guy. Here's the story. White Pride Fitness Room uproar prompts Wisconsin school to change name. The River Falls School District has changed the name of a newly refurbished fitness center in response to critics who warned it could be seen as racist. Originally, the facility at Meyer Middle School was known as Pride Fitness. The project was made possible with $100,000 in private donations, the biggest coming from the family of Roger T. White. You see the problem. The resulting name, the Roger T. White Pride Fitness Room.
Glad it wasn't the Power Center. You
know. The controversy appears to have stemmed from the follow-up comment an official made about how long the new name was. The official said it would be shortened just to White Pride Fitness. The detail was picked up on KMSP-TV, the Fox affiliate in the Twin Cities, which described the shortened name as accidentally racist. The backlash apparently spread as far as Vermont and Great Britain, so there's... I'll let you know about updates about that. Okay. They could just use its first name or something. In Burlington, the pickup driver... Truck driver charged with toppling the Lincoln statue in Burlington. You ever seen that Lincoln statue in Burlington? Quite a nice statue of Lincoln. Not so good horizontal. And apparently, you can't do something like this accidentally. Come on, that guy was aiming for the statue, so I'll let you know what happens there. Lincoln is down. Man who called police gets arrested in Barron. This happens all the time in Barron. A 42-year-old Barron man who called police to report another man pointed a gun at him has been charged with his fifth offense of operating a vehicle while intoxicated. The charge has a maximum penalty of 3 years in prison, so it's a serious thing here. Apparently, the gentleman called Barron police at 10:30 p.m. on Friday saying a man pointed a shotgun at him and told him to leave. Police told him to stay at the location since he told police he had been drinking, but he instead drove home. Seems like a reasonable choice when there's a shotgun pointed at you, too. Whatever the conditions. The man admitted to pointing an unloaded shotgun at him to get him to leave. Then the gentleman failed sobriety tests and had a breath alcohol test that registered 0.179. Okay, twice the legal limit. And so he is being charged. The man who pointed the shotgun at him, however, had good reason. It was called just cause, so we'll let you know what happens on that. A student at Eau Claire Memorial High School, Ken Tanawatanacharan, earned a perfect ACT score of 36, which is I don't think ever happened before. So just give you some idea, 99.96% of students who take the exam score below perfect. So, congratulations to him. No? Couple threw knife at each other? No. It was a fair fight, though, I'll tell you that on that one. Hermits, playing Eau Claire show. Let you know more about that as we get closer to it. Senate panel holding final hearing on the Blaze Pink bill. Okay, no, I don't think so. Here's a police report from also City of Eau Claire on the 500 block of Wagner Avenue. Two homeowners reported their vehicles were entered. At one home, the homeowner reported the theft of a Green Bay Packers baseball cap, stocking hat, mittens, homemade heat pack, and tub of gum. In addition, the thief broke the armrest console of her vehicle and chipped the paint and scratched the door on her husband's car, trying to get into that. The other vehicle reported the theft of Tic Tacs, snack items, and a cell phone charging cord, along with a small air compressor. Okay, that's crime in Eau Claire, so that's... Supreme Court rules there is no Fourth Amendment protection in a private parking garage. Snow sculpture competition going on in Lake Geneva. This should have been outlawed, though. This is a snow sculpture that is simply saying snow. I wanted to point that out to you. I think this is unfair advantage in a snow sculpture contest. And that's it for all the news that is around here, ladies and gentlemen. Most of it okay. Always the occasional incident. By the way, where can they send their memos or their news items? And we'd be happy to broadcast
various
those.
Other sundries.
Yes, and sundries. Various and sundry.
They can send those memos to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, subject line memos, or go to notmuch.com and post them there.
How the Super Bowl became America's most important event? Well, I don't know. Civil War is pretty big. Super Bowl is bigger, I guess. Justin Peters wrote for Slate Magazine. The way to view the Super Bowl is he watched all 50 Super Bowls in 50 days. Well, we don't have the 50th one yet. That's coming up. But 50 in 50 days sounds better. He's joining us now from New York City. And how did you survive that, Justin?
Yeah, it's something you got to do. If your editor says we've got a terrible idea and we've got the person to do it, and the job involves sitting on my for a month and a half and watching football. I said, sure. I can think of worse ways to spend my time. It turned out there are very few worse ways to spend my time. It's a horrible, horrible test.
Are you, in fact, a football fan, Justin?
I'm not as much as I used to be.
Yeah. Now, after that, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, I felt like the kid whose father catches him smoking cigarettes and says, well, I'll teach you. You're going to smoke the entire pack. Watching one game is great. Watching 50 in 50 days is not so great.
Yeah, so it's more like smoking the entire carton, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I claim fame here. I saw the first one back in 67.
Really?
Yeah, you saw it too there. Pretty good game there, except...
You weren't one of the Jetpack guys, were you?
No, I wasn't there. I watched it on TV.
Oh, all right.
It was on Channel 12, as I recall, in Milwaukee. And that was a pretty good game, except we didn't know the Kansas City Chiefs, that was even a football team. Because they are from...
Yeah, America wasn't quite sure that Kansas City was actually a city at that point. That was basically what America was surprised. And they were like, well, this made-up city isn't very good at football, apparently, except they lost the game by a wide.
Yeah. It wasn't called the Super Bowl, though, was it?
No, it's called the AFL-NFL Championship game. It wasn't until a few years later they came up with the Super Bowl.
Yeah. They had merged, though, at that point, right?
They had announced the merger. The merger didn't actually take place until 1970, but that was the whole idea behind the Super Bowl. The AFL started in 1915, and the NFL was like, good luck, guys, and then they had good luck. And then the NFL was like, well, we need to fix this. So they brought it together, and to commemorate the union, they said, let's bowl the champions game. And the first game happened in 1967. The stadium was basically empty. There was 33,000 seats completely unsold in this Los Angeles Coliseum. 51 million people watched at home, and then the rest basically football hit.
At the Coliseum. And there was a movie I saw in which that game was going on in the background. There was some heist going on that involved it was a rather ridiculous movie. But it was during the first Super Bowl game.
Wait, did you say there was a heist movie where the first Super Bowl was going on in the background?
Yes.
Wow, now that sounds more exciting than that game probably
was. Because as I understand it, there isn't a complete existing extant film of Super Bowl I, right?
No, there's apparently one guy who has it, and he's bolted onto it very tightly, and he won't let anybody see it. But you can sort of like get the gist of it through some clips and imagination.
Yeah, yeah. I know Boyd Dollar made a nice catch, is all I remember from it. And, good old boy.
Boyd Dollar was out after like the first play. I feel really bad for Boyd Dollar. I gotta imagine he woke up that morning. He's like, "Yep, life's going great. I'm gonna be starting in the first championship game." And then I think he hurt his side on a kick return. And then Max McGee had to come in, and he's the one that got all the glory.
Maxie the Taxi McGee, ladies and gentlemen, one of the great names in pro football. Yes, Max McGee. So now, did you have to rank? Did you rank these games? I mean, were there any of them that really were outstanding? I mean, what do you think of the Super Bowl in general as an American epic moment?
Like, as a moment every year where we get together with friends and family to not hate the snow and the winter and, you know, have nachos and beer, it's great.
Yeah.
As a football game itself, it leaves a lot. Usually, the games are super boring. They're sloppy, and there's lots of turnovers, and it's like week 20 of the season, all the players are tired. It's not usually great football. There have been some good games, but most of them, it's like, gosh, no one is walking away from this, a football fan who wasn't already a football fan.
Okay. Are you getting some feedback on your end, or is that us doing that? We're getting
I'm hearing it over here, too.
Yeah. Are you in front of a speaker or something, or are we on the speaker?
No. I'm not on the speaker.
Okay.
No.
All right. I'm sorry about that. Did you actually rank the games then in terms of which ones are actually even watchable?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. One of my favorite games was Titans and Rams back in 2000, that with Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk and them, the greatest show on turf. Versus Steve McNair and Eddie George. That was just a great game that you might remember. It came down to like literally the last play, where one of the Rams DBs tackled the Titans receiver right at the 1 yard line, and saved the touchdown and saved the game. That was a fantastic game.
Yeah, I don't remember because I've never watched one that the Packers weren't in.
What's a good one that the Packers?
And they weren't in that one, as I recall.
No, they weren't. They tried to come in disguise, but they caught them. Packers Broncos from one of those years with Favre versus Elway was a super good game.
Yeah.
I think it was 97, 98 or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like John Elway's like 14th Super Bowl, and it was the first one he actually won, and Favre had a really great like drive. They came up just short in the last minute and a half of the game. Listen, there's been some good football games, but they've been far sort of outnumbered by the bad one. There's been a lot of really bad Super Bowls.
Yeah. Now, and then the other thing that's associated with them is not so much the games, but these ads, for some reason, have taken on a life of their own, commercials during the Super Bowl. First of all, how did that happen? Was there a particular game where they first launched unique or crazy commercials and it caught America's attention, or how did it begin?
It was really in like 1984 that the commercials started becoming a thing.
Yeah.
Before that, the first like 15, 20 years of the game, no one was really putting that much money or effort into making the commercials a sort of an attraction of their own. It was mostly just like car commercials, but with like more music at the end. And then Apple came around with their famous commercial titled 1984, where they sort of played on the dystopian imagery of George Orwell's novel to announce the coming of the Apple Macintosh computer. And it was a really well-filmed ad. It looked like it was a movie. And that was the sort of thing where people the next day were like, my gosh, like that commercial was better than the game. And the next year, other advertisers tried to sort of match that. And, you know, now here we are where people honestly say, yeah, I just watched the game for the commercials.
Yeah. Because the Packers aren't in it. That's the end of that song. But did you watch all these games with the commercials intact?
I watched most of them with the commercials intact.
Oh, God.
There's some of the broadcasts. I found these on online. True story. If you, anyone listening wants to try to replicate this feat, go to YouTube, and most of the broadcasts are on there. But a lot of them don't have the commercials attached. So the ones that did, I watched them. You can also find all of the sort of commercials online, so I tried to watch as many as I could.
Yeah. Would you nominate one for the worst commercial of all Super Bowl history?
Surprisingly, it was also Apple that did a commercial that I thought was the absolute worst. This was in 1999, right before the dreaded Y2K. You might remember, everyone was afraid, oh my gosh, year 2000 coming, computers can't sort of won't recognize that date. We're going to fall into the dark ages again.
Right.
And Apple ran this terrible fear-mongering ad using the computer from 2001, A Space Odyssey, which is basically like, ha ha ha, remember back in 2000 when humanity was ruined? It was all because you didn't buy Macintosh. If you bought Macintosh, humanity wouldn't have been destroyed. And I watched it, and I'm like, my gosh, how did the same company that made this great ad 15 years ago make this absolutely horrible one?
Yeah.
It's laughably bad.
Different agency, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. The best, would you say that Apple then was the best commercial as well, or do you have a different favorite?
Yeah,
best?
I mean, like, listen, it's
I like the frog, the frogs on, what was that for? A beer, right?
Oh, Budweiser. Yeah, it was the Budweiser ad, yeah. The talking frog.
Yeah, talking frogs. That stands out for some reason. For
yeah, you got the talking frogs. You got, whenever there's, like, polar bears, like, driving a car, that's always fun.
Good.
You got to get those points. But the Apple ad wasn't just, like, good. It was important, right, because it sort of signified this is now something that happened, that ad agencies put money and time into making these, like, little mini-movies, like, of their own.
Right. And then halftime, when did that become a deal? Like, the halftime was, like, you know, a major event.
Halftime's always been corny, right? It's always been, you know, even from the start. But it was corny in a different way for the first, like, 15, 20 years. It was corny in the way that, like, if your mother was, like, programming, like, the Super Bowl halftime, like, she would pick, like, some, like, marching bands, and maybe she'd, you know, have people, like, release a lot of balloons. And, like, that was basically the Super Bowl, a halftime show. And then there's this one halftime in the early 90s where the Fox Network ran some counter-programming at the halftime. They ran a special episode of In Living Color.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Super Bowl's halftime was basically just marching bands and balloons, like usual. And everyone switched over to Fox to watch In Living Color. And the next year, the NFL was like, well, that can't happen again, so we're going to hire Michael Jackson. And from then on, that was how the Super Bowl halftime show became this sort of star-studded thing, because they're just terrified of people changing the channel and going to something that has more stars.
Yeah, and then Fox, you know, doubled down on that by buying NFL football, you know, owning it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that happened, too.
Is there, for your money, is there a worst halftime? Of course, Coldplay is still coming up, so I put that in the bidding for worst halftime, at least a halftime idea of any for any band in history this coming.
Well, there was, do you remember when there was a magician at the halftime show one year?
No. There was.
Well, you probably blocked it out of your mind. I don't think the Packers were in that game, so maybe you didn't see it. But there was legitimately, like, they hired an Elvis impersonator who didn't actually sing any Elvis songs. Instead, he just did a card trick.
It was
called Elvis Presto.
Elvis Presto.
So you've got the hairstyle of Elvis and the magic word of a magician, and it just made no sense.
Who was playing in that one?
It was Elvis Presto.
I mean, what game was? Who was in the Super Bowl?
Oh God, I remember. That was. They all run together.
Oh, yeah, okay. Somebody was playing somebody. Okay, never mind.
Someone was playing somebody, yeah.
What year was that, did you say?
1989 or 1990, I want to
Yeah. Say. Elvis Presto sounds good. Magician. Just do one trick?
Yeah,
one trick?
You know, four words that no one has ever said. Elvis Presto sounds good.
One trick and he was out?
Yeah, like, listen, like, I think there were 3D glasses involved, like, too. It was a very elaborate, like, halftime show. I sort of feel like someone's, like, four-year-old, like, daughter, like, woke up one morning and was like, there should be magic and Elvis and 3D glasses. And the guy was like, oh, thank God, you saved the halftime show. And then they were totally wrong.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've had the Janet Jackson thing, the famous wardrobe malfunction. That's memorable for that
but
reason
like,
alone.
What people don't remember about that, that there was a streaker. That same year, right after the halftime show, there was this British guy who snuck onto the field.
Oh, that guy's famous.
As an official.
Yeah.
Took off his clothes, did a little dance, and just got destroyed by this Patriots linebacker who wasn't having it. But no one's taking off their clothes in my game. He just sort of laid them out.
Yeah. Did they actually first think that it was an official who had stripped down and just went crazy?
That's an interesting theory.
Yeah. I wish they don't usually, like streakers and things, they don't usually put on camera, though, do they? I mean, that's sort of a...
No, but like, so the people from American television did not air it. But luckily, people from Danish television were under no such pressure. So I found this tape of these Danish sort of like announcers. It's going crazy about this streaker. You've never watched a football game streaker until you've watched it narrated by Danish announcers who you can't understand what they're saying, but you can totally get like their excitement. And they were doing replays and stuff. It was amazing.
Yeah. Then you get to the whole like food thing, eating thing, and suddenly Super Bowl becomes about what you can eat, what you can make, how much you can eat during the game, which is quite a lot actually in the 4 or 5 hours you spend watching the thing. Is that a recent phenomenon as well? When did that all begin? Used to be some dip and a beer.
Always
maybe.
Been a part of it. I mean, you're going to invite people over to your house to watch a game. You got to feed them something, right? And you're going over to someone's house. You don't want to be rude. You got to bring something over. So, I mean, basically, as long as there have been people going over to other people's homes to watch television, there have been sort of dips and nachos and pigs in blankets.
Yeah.
And I guess that's sort of taken on a life of its own, too, as it's sort of become an expected thing, like everyone's going to come here and gorge themselves and feel bad about it in the morning. Like, that's sort of like the reward. Like, Monday morning you go to work, oh, I feel bad. Yeah, well, I feel worse. Oh, no, I feel worse than you guys. You should hear about what I ate. It's sort of like a, maybe he's just my friend, but, like, I definitely try to brag about, like, how much I overindulge on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, but they report how much is, like, the chicken wings thing, the billion chicken wings and so forth. So, actually, it makes the news now. How much was consumed during the Super Bowl?
News you can use.
Yeah. And, of course, if you don't care for the Super Bowl, there is the Otter Bowl going on. There are alternative bowls of various types. So my favorite is the Otter Bowl, which is taking the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach, California, on Sunday.
Do they make the otters play football, or is it just watching otters?
Apparently the otters are very good at football. It's a little-known fact. So if you're not into the Super Bowl, there are alternative bowls going on all over. And, of course, it is also ironic, the fact that nobody in San Francisco wants the Super Bowl to be there. Because, you know, San Francisco. And so they've been tearing down all the signs, all the promotions that they put up for the 50th. You know, all the signs are gone, and people trash them, and people rewrite the signs, you know. And so that's been kind of interesting.
It's sort of like the Olympics, right? No one wants that either. Every time an Olympics comes to a place, all the city fathers are like, hooray. And then the city residents are like, no, there's a lot of traffic, and I can't get around.
Yeah, but especially San Francisco, which is very...
That's the place.
You can imagine. Well, thank you very much, Justin. It's an interesting thing to do, and I hope you survive it.
Well, I'm still here.
Still got to watch the last one.
Call me on Monday if I'm doing that.
Still got to watch the last one on Sunday. Thanks, Justin. Justin Peters.
All right, Michael.
From Slate Magazine. And that was all about something. That was all about something. Okay. But why watch men toss a football when you can go to the Otter Bowl?
That's what I want to watch, Michael.
Yeah, Otter Bowl.
Do they have a live stream of that?
I hope so.
hope so too.
I'm sure you can find it. Look, just do a, you know, Google Otter Bowl.
It sounds adorable.
The Puppy Bowl is nice too.
Puppy Bowl, yes. I've actually seen the. I watched Puppy Bowl last since the Packers haven't been in it for a while now. I've watched a couple of Puppy Bowl.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite impressive.
Yeah. So cute.
Yeah. Okay. Anyhow. All right. You going to be watching, John?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I always watch.
I suppose I will. What else is there to do?
Yeah. What else are you going to be doing?
It's hard. It's hard to watch a game when you really don't care who wins or what.
Well, you got
to.
You got to pump yourself
up
somehow.
The Patriots game, you always are. You know.
Yeah. You root against them. So
you want to see them lose. But you don't want to see anybody else win either, so it's kind of weird.
No, I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of 50-50. I really don't care who wins.
All right. Okay. Okay. Thanks for that. So this here now, this song here.
This is here. Song is an old jazz standard called Just Friends.
Just Friends. Okay. Did it hit the ground at any point?
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Michael Feldman.
Working? Is this, can you hear me? Oh, God, that was close. Or what would you have said had you had a mic that was working in that little 1 minute off air time that you're allotted?
It's hard to say, Michael.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. I really am. We don't want to talk about the Super Bowl anymore. That's all I ever want to even think about, a Super Bowl or anything else. And I don't know. Are you going to watch the Super Bowl?
Yes, I am.
You are. Are you rooting for anyone or the other?
I actually feel just like you do. It's best to have them end in a tie. That'll never end.
Yeah. And are you having people over?
No.
Are you going over to, you know, people?
I have no friends, Michael.
Would you like to come over to my place, or I'll come over to your place? How about that? It'd be better.
I think I'll go to yours.
Okay.
I'm from Green Bay. It's a long way.
Oh, you're in Green Bay.
Then. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, and do you have season tickets to the Packers?
I do. Yeah. I have season tickets. I have had them for over 50 years.
Really? So, what's your name?
My name?
Yeah.
Gary.
Last time, I want to look up your mailbox there and come.
Gary D. Bush.
Get those tickets. No, Gary. So who did you kill 50 years ago to get those tickets?
Actually, I've had them since 1956 or 7.
Yeah.
And I actually worked on
this. Look in the obituaries in 56 and see who got off.
I actually worked on the stadium when it was constructed. I was in college here at Madison.
Yeah.
And then I, in the summertime, worked for the construction company that built the stadium.
Yeah.
And I also worked there when they built the first addition.
Yeah.
And, in fact, our daughter was born on a day that we took the 4th of July weekend off to and building the stadium.
Yeah.
And so, I've got a long history with the Packers.
Yeah. So you actually took time off from the Packers building to have a daughter. That's a pretty good idea.
Actually, my wife had more to do with it than I.
I understand that. So you're responsible for those narrow little benches they put in there? I wanted that. You know, look at the average person in Green Bay and take a look at the benches they have in Lambeau Field. And what do you conclude?
What I conclude is that I remember there was a guy in law school here at Madison whose job was for the entire summer to carry two little skinny planks. The current aluminum ones are new. The old seats there before those aluminum ones were two skinny little boards. And he individually carried each one and put them in place. And then carpenters came along and attached them. And his job for the entire summer of law school was to put those seats or boards in place. And he walked the whole stadium by himself.
Yeah, but you know what? He should have measured every rear end in Green Bay.
I agree with you totally. In fact, it's a nice thing to do in the wintertime for a cold game, because you don't have to worry about being too close to your buddy, because you got to like shoehorn yourselves in.
Yeah. Well, I know, but I'm talking about the slop over. You don't know what the slop over. You want to Slop this over or you want to slop that over? I mean, it's not much of a choice.
Yes, it's very, very difficult to get a large size person. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you for all you've did and all you've done and all you do. Well,
what a noble effort.
Yeah, no, really, really. It's great. Great to know you.
Nice meeting you.
Pleasure. It's a beautiful stadium, Lambeau. I think it's one of the best ever. Probably the best stadium in all of NFL football. Yes.
One of the humorous things is the championship game, the famous Ice Bowl.
Yeah.
Tickets for that game sold for $10 a piece. They were normally $4 tickets, but the NFL jacked them up on Championship Sunday to $10. Can you compare that to the current idiotic price to attend?
And you know what, too? I met a guy. I was sitting next to a guy on a plane one time. I don't know where we're going, but he was from Green Bay. He was in high school during that, the Super Bowl, in those games, and they used to let kids in the stand under the stands. They could stand under the stands for the game, free. High school, Green Bay high school kids.
Actually, what they did is they jumped over the fence, and they didn't care.
Yeah, that's what I said. They used to jump over the fence. And they'd stand there, and he said he was there for the famous Ice Bowl watching it, and he was right there in the end zone under the stands.
In fact, our seats are right in front of where Bart Starr went over behind Ken Bowman and Jerry Kramer's block.
Yeah, it was.
It's the famous play in Green Bay history.
Yeah. You don't think of him really as going down the middle too much, Bart Starr.
Enough said. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Friends talking. Well, he said they let him in. I don't know. You say they went over the fence. I tend to believe you. Let me ask you this question, everybody. In the world of utensils, which one reigns supreme? Haley Krings. Knows. You sell utensils? Or?
I don't. I just thought it would be.
That's just a question you thought of? That has nothing, that leads to nothing? It's just a question that you thought should be posed.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite utensil?
I don't know. I think I use a fork the most.
Okay, fork. Good.
That'd be my bet, too. Okay, thanks very much for that, Haley. That was a showstopper. anyone want to bring up a different utensil that they... You know, what I think is the one that's probably the least... least predictable in terms of invention back in whenever things were invented... The colander. Because how would you drain your spaghetti without a colander? I mean, it's the one essential thing. You know, how would you do it? You pick up each individual strand of spaghetti. What? I've done the lid. It's not good. It's not efficient. It's not. The colander is a brilliant solution to draining any sort of pasta. Okay. The plumber's helper, is that a utensil? That's a very important. I would not have predicted the plumber's helper before there was one. I would have predicted the need for it. I'm trying to do the best I can with this. We're going to leave that subject right now. Why do people stop their car so far behind the crosswalk? Jim from Montana, where they apparently don't have crosswalks. Are you from Montana? Do they have crosswalks in Montana? I doubt it.
Yeah. Safe and prudent.
Where are they going to? In Laramie, there's a crosswalk somewhere? It's in Wyoming. That's why. See, I caught you. Stand up here just a second. Montana, Billings.
Yes, Billings.
There are crosswalks in Billings.
Yes. Okay.
Why do you ask this question?
Because you're in line in the cars, and this guy is parked way back, and you know that the sensor for the streetlight is up by the crosswalk. And you're wondering, if you weren't there to drive on the sensor, how's that idiot ever going to get the light to change?
Yeah.
And you spend half
you ever think about other things other than this? Or?
Your younger life, you spend
how long has
irritating
this been?
Everybody around you. And your older life, you wonder why those people are irritating you.
Because in Montana, you're not used to stopping for anything, right?
No. Get out of our way.
Right. Do you still have the no speed limits or your own discretion speed limit?
Oh, because people come in from out of state and don't understand the rules, we have a speed limit now, but it's 80.
That's ridiculous. It should be 100 at least if you're going to put a speed limit.
Yeah, damn the crosswalks. Full
80
speed.
80 if there's a crosswalk? Is that what Thanks very much, Jim.
Thank you.
It was very hallucinating, whatever that was. As I understand it, wasn't it Montana? Drive as conditions warrant. As fast as conditions will let you or something, isn't it?
Reasonable and prudent.
Okay. Which varies a lot according to individuals, your background, your culture, your religious beliefs. What?
Your friendly highway patrol officer's interpretation.
Your V8, your V6, whatever.
Yeah. Tires.
I got a Lexus, you know. I've had one. It's 10 years old now, so it's not such a big deal, but I've never really floored that. And I got to go to Montana. But now I'll get arrested in Montana.
Yeah, you can only go 80 now.
Don't you get into big discussions with the arresting officer about conditions warrant?
Definitely, yeah.
That happened to you?
Or you just don't get caught. Huh? You just don't get caught.
If you go fast enough, you can't get caught.
Yeah.
Come on, those cruisers, it's better than my 10-year-old Lexus. You know, it's going to... Okay, well, thank you very much. Welcome. What are you doing here from Montana?
Visiting my son and his wife.
Come.
Oh, he got a major award. So we
what'd you get?
Enjoy it with him.
He has to tell you.
I got an award from the School of Public Affairs for government service.
All right. Your name is
Jared Knowles. Jared.
Congratulations, public service. Well, that's worth coming for. That's terrific. Congratulations. We're gonna play What Do You Know quiz again because you had a chance last time, but you didn't. Was that you who had your hand up, Mr. Public Service? Come on down here. Because and you and I, and I told you, because of all your public service over the years,
Jared.
You don't have to give a reason because you're in public service and you deserve that award. Come on up here, Jared. Public service. Service. No longer a dirty word, ladies and gentlemen. It's a good thing Jared is here. And what was you, what did you do in terms of?
I work for the Department of Public Instruction, and I made a tool for teachers to figure out what students they should target to work with before they drop out of high school and in high school.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And what sort of tool did you come up with?
Well, it's actually a statistical thing, so I always tell people I did a bunch of math, but the teachers do the hard work of actually helping the kids, but I do a bunch of math to help them figure out which kids are likely to need the help.
Well, is that interesting? Yeah. Is it your training is in...
Statistics. Social science statistics.
Yeah.
Yep.
And who do you work for to do that now? Do you work for the Department of Public Instruction?
The Department of Public Instruction, yep.
In
Madison, right down the road. Yeah.
All right for us.
Yeah.
There's one for us. Well, that's terrific. That's an excellent idea. Okay, and do you work at a bench there at the Department of Public Instruction?
We get a very spacious cubicle, which is space is defined in state law, I believe, how much space we each get.
What? How much space do you get in a state cubicle?
10 by 12 or something, maybe?
10 by 12 is a cell in county jail in Texas, I think. You get 10 by 12.
We can get a standing desk, though, so that, you know, that is, it's very possible.
Do you have a standing
desk? I do not. I like to sit.
Is that popular now among the young set?
There's not a lot of young
set
in my office.
We don't call them for about 100 years. What?
There's not a lot of young set at my office.
No, there isn't?
No.
It's gotten to be the old set.
Huh? Yeah.
Old set. Your setters now. Well, that's interesting. Okay, and what do you do for kicks, Jared? What things are you into?
Oh, I don't know. In Madison, we like to go out to eat. My wife and I like to go to all the great restaurants and figure out what to eat.
You're an eater, huh?
Yeah, big time.
Do you cook as well?
I'm starting to cook now.
Are you taking it seriously?
Yeah, I have been trying to keep up and
And what are you experimenting with? What sort of dishes?
Fish fry. Being in Wisconsin, I've been trying all sorts of fish fry recipes lately.
Fish fry.
Yeah.
Beer. You just put beer in the batter.
Just beer in the batter.
Throw it in the.
But what kind of beer?
Doesn't really matter. Fish doesn't care. Fish could care less.
All right.
You know, kind of ruins the beer, you know, but you can still, you know, get a little bit off it.
Okay.
The alcohol goes off. So, yeah, I don't know. Fish fry. Beer batter. Jared, someone out there plays along with you. You know how this works?
Absolutely.
General knowledge, and then right?
Yes.
What?
Hi.
And hi. All right.
Good.
Do you cook? At all?
I do cook.
Cook seriously? Seriously?
I don't define seriously.
Seriously means with serious intent.
Oh, yes. I do everything with serious intent, Michael. How dare you question my seriousness?
All right. How does someone play the quiz, then?
If people want to play the quiz, they're going to pick up the phone and dial 800-942-5669 and answer this qualifying question.
Oh, Oh, here you go. If you heard the monologue today, well, this should help you. A 99-million-year-old daddy long legs was found with an extra long leg. Explain. Let's go to the phones right now. Paul's on the line from Woodstock, Illinois. Hey, Paul.
Hey.
How you doing?
I am doing good, except that I didn't hear your monologue today because okay. I was in a meeting.
Well, did you hear this 99-million-year-old daddy long legs they found with an extra long leg?
No, but you hum a few bars.
Talk to you again, Paul. Thanks for calling. Damon's in Memphis.
Yes, sir.
Damon, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Now that you called me sir, I'm doing a lot better, actually.
never
get that. Damon, did you hear about the 99-million-year-old daddy long legs found with the extra long leg?
I hate to say that I missed your monologue. And,
okay. I hate to hear it. You would hate to hear it, too, probably. But. Thanks, Damon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bye. It's also in the news. It's in the news, not just my monologue. It wasn't a joke, necessarily, if it's in my monologue. Bunny's in Woodbury, Connecticut. Hey, Bunny.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well today.
Good, good. And I got something planned for later on today?
Yes. I'm going to visit my mom in the hospital, and then tomorrow we're going to see a show.
Okay. So the bad and the good, huh?
Yeah.
Bunny, a 99-million-year-old daddy long legs was found with an extra long leg. Explain.
Yes, it was a very randy.
Thank you for that. That's exactly the way I should have put it. A randy, it was fossilized in that in randy condition.
Correct.
Very good. That's exactly right. You qualify, Bunny, from Woodbury, Connecticut. What are you doing these days out there, Bunny?
I work for one of the largest IT companies in the world.
You do?
I do.
Does it have a name?
I'll tell you, it has the color blue.
Blue IT.
Big blue?
Big blue.
Something like that.
IBM?
There you go.
IBM? Oh, does that still exist?
I hope so.
I hope so, because otherwise you don't have a job. Yeah, no, that's great. What do you do for them?
I'm a project executive. I travel all over the world and talk to our customers.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
This is Jared. He's your partner. Jared is working for the state, and he works in statistics and came up with an award of public service for figuring out a device. Well, you tell her.
to help teachers identify kids to intervene with and before they get into trouble.
Very cool. Nice to meet you.
Excellent. Nice to meet you, Bunny.
Okay. Well, Jared, Bunny, you are a cooperative unit.
A team.
A team.
A team.
Thank you for that word. And how do we proceed from here?
From here, we're going to hear the categories. And those
I didn't
categories...
mean that you weren't serious about
them. Oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
The categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
I know you're serious about ukulele playing.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm
no, you are.
Not planning on debuting that on the radio anytime
soon.
No,
bring it next week. You said you would bring it. You got to bring it.
Okay.
Okay, Bunny, you pick the first category. What would you like?
Things you should have been learning in school had you been paying attention.
All right. All right, the hadrosaur. Hadrosaur, with its broad, flat jaws designed for scooping water plants, is commonly known as the what kind of dinosaur?
Hadrosaur. Duck-billed dinosaur?
I'm going with that.
Yes, duck-billed dinosaur. Very good. Cool. All right.
That's one right, and the remaining categories are current events, people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Jared?
Let's go current events.
Current events. Okay. Okay, this is cooking related, I guess. The Chick-fil-A great idea for healthier living is to eat an 8-pack of grilled nuggets every how often?
Every day? Is that what you think, Bunny?
I'm sure they'd like that.
Okay. Maybe you didn't. Did you hear about this in the news at all? About the Chick-fil-A healthy diet? How often you're supposed to eat their chicken nuggets, the grilled ones?
5 times a week? No, I don't know.
No, every day.
What should we guess, Bunny?
This is. Seems like a joke, but it's not. Because how often they expect you to eat their nuggets?
Twice a day?
Twice a day?
I don't expect them to have my best interest at heart, so.
Every how many hours would you say?
Oh.
Wow.
Every 4 hours.
There you go.
Wow.
Oh, yes. Every 3 to 4 hours, you should eat 8-pack of grilled nuggets from Chick-fil-A for a healthier diet.
Well, that's two, right?
That's got to work, too. Someone try that. Let me know how that works for you.
The remaining categories are people, places, science, and odds and ends.
All right, Bunny, what would you like?
Hey, let's go with science.
Science it is, and this is actual science. If they think they are being watched, ravens do one of the following. Do they A, turn white, B, peck 911 with their beaks, or C, hide their food?
I'm thinking hide their food.
I agree. C.
Yes, they hide their food. Okay, so they've won. But we have time here. They could go for all the gusto.
Yeah, the mother load.
The mother load,
the
finally.
The mother load.
So if you get the, well, explain with the mother load.
Oh, so you get this next one right and you win the mother load.
But explain what the mother load is.
It's a bunch of amazing prizes.
It's everything. We empty out the closet on the mother load. Okay, you want to go for it, Bunny and Jared?
Michael, I listen to your show, WSHU and WNPR here in Connecticut, to make them proud. Even though they're not covering your show, I say let's go for it.
I'm in.
All right. They're in.
For the mother load?
What remains as far as our categories? You got to get this one right, you win everything. You get it wrong, you lose everything.
All right. For the mother load, Jared and Bunny, remaining categories are people, places, and odds and ends.
Okay.
Let's Jared, go with, what do you think?
Let's go with places.
Okay with you, Bunny?
That sounds great.
You can collaborate on this one. In his or her lifetime, or ter lifetime, if you prefer that, the average American moves how many times? This is moves an entire lifetime. Is it 4, 7, or 11 times?
I'm thinking 7 or 11, Bunny. What do you think?
Let's see. 11.
So you're not thinking 4. We can cross out 4 then?
Oh, well, it depends on what
crossing
Bunny
out
says.
4. So 7 or 11 times.
I think 11 sounds great.
11 times?
Oh, that's now it's sounding too high. 11 sounding too high.
You're in statistics, but you're not always right.
You know what, Jared, I'd be willing to bet it's 11.4 times a lifetime.
11.4. Okay, well, I'm going to trust Bunny.
Yeah, if there's a point
like
in there, he's in it.
Knowledge.
You got him on that one. Yes, 11 times. Congratulations.
Awesome. Jared, you'll make fried egg sandwiches and grilled cheese taste terrific with a jar of sweet and fancy yellow mustard from Wisconsin's own Mustard Girl Mustards.
Mustard.
And then free the genius in your brain by following the neurological revelations in The Superhuman Mind by Barrett Brogard and Christian Marlowe from Hudson Street Press. Find out the bad
Where's
news
the
about what's
stuff?
Good for you, as well as the good news about what's bad for you by Jeff Wilser from Flatiron Books. And win the quiz over and over again with What Do You Know? The Party Game, including the well-dressed Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com.
What else? But
Bunny, discover America as distilled through Michael's life on the road, as set forth in his book, Something I Said, Innuendo and Out the Other, including the Ready for Broadway CD, My Life, the Musical, from Terrace Books.
What?
Then make your dog the talk of the walk with a tie-on Daisy bandana from Stellaware.com.
What?
Be the star at the next numismatic convention, showing off the exclusive 2010 minting of the Silver Jubilee Anniversary Quarter, featuring the father of Small Talk Radio, and more prizes, Michael, but I can't
There's
get
even
to
more?
Them all. More.
But
there
wait,
is more.
There's more.
Congratulations to both of you.
You cleaned up. Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it. Bunny, hang on for a second. Thank you for playing.
Thanks, Michael.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio
tired.
For Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, Producer International. Adam Friedrich is our producer with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Hannah Pohn, Kelly Osborne, and Diana Cook.
Wait.
Technical Director Tom Blaine
the
with
wave.
Help from Brad Holberg.
Thank you for coming, you guys. Thanks for listening. Talk to you again next week. Boys in the Band. Stephanie Lee, most definitely. Thank you all. Yes! Yes!
Public Radio International.